This is The Allusionist, in which I, Helen Zaltzman, am taught by language how to do the bend and snap. It changed my life. This episode is all about a creature that has so many names. In British English, a ladybird. American English, a ladybug. That's just for starters. This episode is a crossover with the podcast Science Diction from WNYC. It's about words and the science stories behind them. And if you go to their feed, you can hear me on their episode called It'll Never Fly, all about the names of fruit fly genes, which are very creative. So hear that on the Science Diction feed, and hear us now talking about ladybugs, ladybirds, ladybugs, ladybirds. I'll code switch. On with the show.
I am Johanna Mayer. I host the Science Diction podcast.
I am Ella Fetter, and I am the senior producer for podcasts at Science Friday.
Say you have to name a creature. It's little, maybe quarter of an inch long. It's sort of hemispherical. It's probably a bright color with some dots on it. What would you call it?
All right. Bright, hemispherical, quarter of a centimeter long?
A quarter of an inch. Spotty.
Have you told us the color?
Well, there's a range available, but let's say like one of the hot colors, orange, yellow, or red.
I'm going to call it a moon bug.
That's cute.
Oh, that's good.
For the shape and the craters, are you thinking?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Very nice.
Oh, mine isn't as good. I was going to maybe like Lil Tomato, but like Lil, L-I-L. So it's cute.
Aww.
Something like that. Yeah.
Like a little flying fruit.
Flying fruit, yes. Winged tomato.
Ella and Johanna's names go pretty well in the canon of ladybird names across different languages, which include little coconut, tortoise beetle, spoon insect, patch sower, umbrella insect, flowery big sister, celestial path insect, red mother, Ali's mother, coral beetle, good luck bug, child of the sun, little midwife.
My name is Tamsin Majeris. I am an academic at the University of Nottingham, and my research interests focus around the evolutionary biology, ecology, and genetics of ladybirds in particular, although I do some work on other invertebrates, but ladybirds are my favourite.
What drew you to ladybirds in particular?
I was very lucky in that I happened to be in the genetics department in Cambridge, where there was a group working on ladybirds, and an opportunity arose for me to go and work in that lab, and I was instantaneously sucked in. They're so much more fun to work with than Drosophila, so fruit flies is what I had worked on previously. You know, useful as they may be as a genetic tool, I don't find them quite as appealing as ladybirds.
Fair enough. I think a lot of people like ladybirds in ways they don't like other creatures. Do you think that's just aesthetics?
Aesthetics is clearly a big part. So brightly coloured, really attractive insects. Kids love them. Kids can see them, you know, you spot them. But I think they're very useful. So they're the gardener's friend, the farmer's friend, all of those things. And I think that's another side to their appeal that makes people love them.
How do they get to be the farmer's friend?
So their main diet are things like green flies, sap-sucking insects. Some of them will eat fungi, some of them will eat plants, but most of them eat these green fly type pests on plant crops. So you have a field of your favourite crop, and unless you spray it with some kind of insecticide, it gets covered in the things that destroy the crop. Ladybirds come along and they eat those things for you, and suddenly your crop is okay again. So they've saved billions of dollars of pest damage. So they're used commercially in a lot of places these days.
Are there any downsides to using ladybirds in that way as pest control?
There are. They've had quite a lot of negative publicity in the last perhaps 10 years, 5 to 10 years, particularly Harmonia axeridis, which is the ladybird I've worked on most closely, I guess, otherwise known as the Harlequin ladybird. And it's been used widely for biocontrol. So introduced in the States, all across Europe, came to England and spread. So it's the fastest spreading invasive organism, spread across the UK very rapidly, outcompeted many of our native species. So it went from being not even a resident to being the most populous species within a couple of years of its arrival. And in other places, you know, although it does a lot of good on crops and protecting crops from pests, in things like vineyards, you know, or fruit farming, it's been named as a pest because it can contaminate the flavor of whatever you're making. So particularly in a vineyard, if you're harvesting grapes and you don't get rid of all the ladybirds contain these chemicals which taste disgusting, and that can taint the wine. So you get this thing called wine taint, where there's a horrible, and then they have to throw away the wine because it tastes of ladybird chemicals.
Wow. How many ladybirds do you have to get in it to ruin it?
Well, that's a good question. I imagine quite a few.
Okay. Not like one ladybird ruins the whole barrel.
No, I don't think so. But if there were plenty of green fly for them to eat, there'll be more than one ladybird.
Historically, though, ladybirds' wine crimes have been overlooked in favour of their helpful properties, which have earned them such exalted names. For the lady in ladybird or ladybug is Mary, Mother of God. She's also there in other languages terms for ladybird, such as Spanish, Mariquita, Little Mary, in German, Marienkäfer, Mary's bug, in Catalan, Vola Maria, Flying Mary, in Norwegian, Marihörne, Mary's hen, in Swedish, Jungfrau Maria's Nyckelpiga, Virgin Mary's servant in charge of the keys, because Mary or her servant had the keys to heaven.
And the Virgin Mary reference seems to stem from early paintings of the Virgin Mary, often have her in a red cloak. So there's this link with the colour. And then people have said that the seven spots represent her seven pains and her seven virtues, or her seven joys and her seven sorrows, depending on whose version of the event you're listening to.
They're always backwards engineering things to represent something from the Bible.
Yeah.
Like passion flowers and peacocks and such.
But there are other saints who, you know, the ladybird names translate to other saints.
In Argentina, it's St. Anthony's little cow. In Finland, Red Bridget, after St. Bridget. I don't know whether it's also saints referred to in the Portuguese Joanina and Mexican Catarina. There are various other Catherine-derived ladybird names in different languages. In some parts of Italy, there is Lucia and also Porcoletto de Santa Lucia, St. Lucia's little piglet.
In Hebrew, it is a Moses's cow. The Hebrews love Moses, so it's a compliment.
In other religious ladybird names, in some regions of Britain, they are known as Bishop Barnaby.
Bishy Bishy Barnaby. So I think he was a real person, and I believe he also wore black and red a lot.
Oh. Maybe he had wings and ate a lot of bugs.
Maybe he had a black cloak.
There are so many divine names. Indra's shepherd, a tribute to the Hindu deity of storms. Freya Fugl, Freya's bird after the pagan goddess Freya. Heavenly path insect. God's little cow, God's little lamb, God's chicken, God's horse, little messiah, little animal of our good lord, our lord's ox, ark of God, God's grain of food, shepherdess of Christ.
My favourite one's heaven's little beast. It's the same sort of idea. There's one, I think one Italian one, and only one, that refers to the devil. So out of all the hundreds of names, there seems to be only one that suggests something bad. I think it roughly translates as devil's chicken.
They are not ladies, and they're not birds. They're not even technically bugs. So what are ladybirds?
So they are beetles, Coleoptera beetles, and that name comes from two Greek words. So koleos, which means sheath, and pteron with a P, which means wing. And so they have these wing cases that cover their wings. So they do fly like birds, but they have this special design where they have hard wing cases that protect the wings when they're not flying. And then within Coleoptera, ladybirds are coccinellides. Coccinellidae means clad in scarlet. When they were first named in Latin, they were known because of their red coloration, which is probably the commonest color of ladybirds, but absolutely not the only one.
Yeah. Have we got about, 40-odd types of ladybird in Britain?
In Britain, about 46, I think, current counts.
Wow.
But only 26 of those are what they call conspicuous. So only 26 of those are colours other than black or brown. The remaining 20 are what we call little brown jobs or little black jobs. They're fairly indistinct. I certainly can't tell them apart.
Dowdy.
Yeah, exactly. Very, very dowdy.
Dowdy cow is a name for ladybirds in some parts of Britain, which I think is way off the mark given how attention-grabbing ladybirds' colours and patterns are. But aside from being visually arresting, what are those colours and patterns for?
So they have a couple of functions, actually. Most frequently, warning coloration. So a warning to a predator that they're not nice in some way. So for ladybirds, it's because of the chemicals they're full of. So they have these chemicals that taste disgusting and may even be poisonous to some predators. And the idea is you have a color pattern that's very memorable, very bright, very colorful, very memorable. So the one predator may try one ladybird once and then never going near another one. And so you get this learnt avoidance of things with the same color pattern.
I guess wine wasn't able to register that danger.
Grapes don't run away, so that's no good. The other thing they can do is mimicry. They can be cunningly designed, or camouflage, they can be cunningly designed to blend in with a background or to pretend to be something else.
Are there any other reasons why ladybirds are historically so highly fated, aside from eating the pests off the crops?
So there are old tales of how ladybirds have medicinal benefits and they can cure measles and colic. Grinding a ladybird up and rubbing it on your tooth is supposed to cure toothache. Folklore, if you like. But they seem to be quite widely spread. And actually, very interestingly, some more recent research has shown that the harlequin has a chemical which only the harlequin produces, which is called hermanine. And that seems to protect against malaria. So it actually stops the plasmodium, the parasite that causes malaria, from infecting mosquitoes.
Incredible.
It was absolutely incredible. And so, you know, the suggestion that maybe these people knew something we didn't, even if they didn't know how it worked, it was a genuine benefit to health.
In case ladybirds need more names, how about the flying medic or malaria buster? God's little flying malaria busting cow.
I would assume the cow is because of the spots.
Mm-hmm. A very logical jump.
Going from spotted to cow seems like a leap. There's other spotted animals. Like, we don't call cheetahs killer cows, or like, I don't know, what else is spotted? Dalmatians? They're kind of cow-like. I would buy that.
God's little cheetah just didn't have the same ring to it.
Well, the cheetahs didn't help with pests.
Cows don't help with pests.
What about the chicken?
Yeah, what about the chickens? Yeah. It's not like it's a flying bird.
Yeah.
The chicken, yeah, really seems like the most out of left field.
And the chicken doesn't seem like a helper, like a benevolent helper, the way that we see the cow, I guess.
I'd also seen both Clock Lady and Lady Clock, which I'm assuming is another spots related.
I think is that a Scottish one?
Yes.
I think that's probably a corruption of the word cloak.
Oh, okay.
So Lady Cloak again, Mary and her red cloak, perhaps.
Golden Turtle.
Ooh, that's a good one. I haven't heard that, but there are orange ladybirds. There are yellow ladybirds. That could be golden, couldn't it?
Do you think that people would be less squeamish about bugs? Let's use bugs in a very general way. If their names were more cute, like ladybugs' names are cute.
Could we trick people into loving cockroaches and spiders if we called them like mini muffin
fluff bugs? Or, you know, I feel like there is discrimination on bugs based on their names, or like there's positive discrimination based on their names, like dragonflies, you know. I feel like those have a very nice reputation.
Great bit of branding.
And damselflies. How do you feel about, what are they called, pill bugs? They're like, they're found often in basements.
Oh, well, like wood lice.
Yeah, wood lice, roly-polies, it looks like, is another.
Oh, yeah, the roly-poly.
They have so many fun names.
Yeah, for some reason. Oh, doodle bugs and slaters?
Ooh.
Wood pigs, granny pigs, crunchy bats, billy buttons, nut bugs, monkey peas, cheese logs, butchy boys, granddads. I promise I'm not making these up.
You can, like, dress it up as cute as you want. I still find them creepy.
I don't know. See, I'm the opposite. I don't get... Bugs just don't freak me out. I think that they're very cool. So the name, I guess the name doesn't really matter to me, but I love calling them roly-polies.
And you're not bothered by them?
I'm not bothered by bugs. I'm not even bothered by cockroaches.
Really?
I know that that's like a big thing for a lot of people, but the cockroach does not destroy me.
I think we need to give people more credit. I think that they can see past a PR stunt. To the inherent creepiness. No?
We should mention that the collective name for ladybirds is A Loveliness of Ladybirds.
Well.
Which just goes to prove that they're lovely.
Take that, ravens.
Exactly.
In this episode, you heard from Tamsin Majerus, who is a ladybird expert at the University of Nottingham. Find her on Twitter at Dr. Ladybird. That is DR underscore Ladybird. Johanna Mayer and Ella Feder make the WNYC podcast Science Diction, about words and the science stories behind them. There is so much good stuff in their feed, quite jealous, such as how introvert-extrovert categories resulted from a bust-up between Sigmund Freud and Carl Jung, why linguistics makes Rocky Road ice cream sound tastier, and where the word quarantine comes from. Also, their latest episode, called It'll Never Fly, is about fruit fly gene names, a really fascinating subject, and in it they set me a quiz to see whether I could guess what those outlandish names were about. Would just like to qualify by saying I'm not a fruit fly genetics expert, but I gave it my best shot. Hear that and all of the Science Diction episodes in the pod places and via wnycstudios.org. Your randomly selected word from the dictionary today is anaclitic, adjective, psychoanalysis, relating to or characterized by a strong emotional dependence on another or others. Origin 1920s, from Greek, anakletos, for reclining. Try using anaclitic in an email today. This episode was produced by me, Helen Zaltzman, thanks to Steve Cross. The music is by Martin Austwick of palebirdmusic.com. Our ad partner is Multitude. To sponsor an episode of the show, contact them at multitude.production/ads and hurry up because there are not many spaces left for this year. The Illusionist will be back in a month, taking a little break to get going on episodes for the rest of the year. And what's that? A new live show? Keep the afternoon of 4th of September free and await further details. During that time, I'll also be finishing up my other podcasts, Answer Me This and Veronica Mars Investigations. Aww. After which, it will just be you and me, illusioning unto infinity. So, help keep the show going if you like by becoming a supporter at patreon.com/illusionist and receive such rewards as all those recordings for phone alerts and alarms, plus a discount for the upcoming live show in person or online, and behind-the-scenes info about each new episode. Want to hear about my brief spell of owning pet ladybirds last year? Come back, ladybirds, I miss you! Go to patreon.com/illusionist and stay in touch on Twitter, Instagram and Facebook at Illusionist Show and tell me what you call ladybirds, if not ladybirds or ladybugs. And to hear or read every episode of The Illusionist and find more information about the topics therein and see the full dictionary entries for the randomly selected words and browse a lexicon of every word ever covered in the show, visit theillusionist.org.